Chapter 5. Orisha Spirit Company Estate the 2nd. Orun, Spirit Space. October 31st, 2016. 6:41 p.m. The world was spinning around him when Shigiri woke up. His head was pulsing like a fearful heart. When he tried to open his eyelids, the light attacked his eyes like an army of sharp red needles as his hangover began to bloom. He felt like he had been in an accident, or he had somehow become the living embodiment of an accident, and so he didn't try to move. He lay in place, eye shut against the world, completely motionless, for what felt like hours, occasionally opening his eyes just enough to see if the world had stabilized. It never did. Eventually, he decided he had to get moving, or he would be unreasonably late for work, even by his own abysmally low standards. He elevated himself onto one elbow and managed to roll off the rough raffia mat that served as both bed and sitting area, before he vomited a good portion of the previous day's merriment and excess onto the red clay floor of his company-assigned hut. The mess was brown and viscous, full of half-digested kola nuts, morsels of masticated meat, palm wine, and blood. Lots of blood. More than usual for a wild night out with his only drinking buddy, Oshoshi, the Orisha of hunting. He retched and threw up a second wave of vomit that left him feeling slightly less terrible, but only just. After that, the world seemed a little less unstable. He summoned the will to drag himself to his feet, stumble through the creaking wooden door and past the brush beside his brick hut, to the hole in the ground that served as a crude latrine. He was there for what felt like days, even though it was only a few minutes, all of them spent heaving, retching, and spitting. When only a clear and colorless liquid came up after each burning retch, and he felt like his insides had been scrubbed with a handful of freshly cut palm fronds, he lifted his head from the stink and darkness of the pit and looked up towards the spirit sky. The sun hung low and there were no clouds, just a series of blue and red and yellow streaks, broad and blurring into and out of each other's edges, making it look like a silk sheet had been generously tied and dyed by an artist and spread out above them. On the horizon, though, where the spirit sky met the ground beyond the forest that marked the company compound, a halo of blue ringed the spirit world. It was beautiful, Shigiri had to admit. Every day the spirit sky took on a new appearance, and this one was particularly impressive. He turned away and spat out a final glob of phlegm before standing on his small, unsteady feet and muttering under his breath. If only Oloru spent half as much time paying attention to company business as he did playing games with the colors of the heavens, maybe the spirit company wouldn't be such a mess. The Orishas of the spirit company all knew that Oloru was vain, their aloof and leisurely sky god. But Shigiri had always felt an affinity with and admiration for Oloru. Even though he'd never met his creator and his initial admiration was slowly morphing into resentment, he still desperately wished that the retired chairman of the board of what used to be one of the largest spirit companies in existence would care enough about the organization he had left fallow to check in on them every once in a while. Instead, Oloru had allowed the company to degenerate in his absence. Shigiri felt unmotivated, uninterested in executing any of the tasks required as condition of his godhood in the Orisha Spirit Company. But he had to go to work, else he would weaken and eventually die. Or, perhaps worse, he'd have to answer to the more powerful Orisha that managed the company. Godhood is overrated. He staggered and stumbled his way to the back of his hut, where a crude clay enclosure with an entrance covered by palm fronds marked his bath area. He stripped off his filthy Ankara print trousers and left them, then grabbed a half-cut calabash floating on the filmy surface of a bucket of stale water. He dumped a bowl full of water on his head, and as it ran down his body, he slowly began to feel like himself again. At least as much of himself as he could be with a terrible hangover. He scrubbed his rough, calloused hands over his skin, trying to make himself decently clean, and wiped away most of the grime and dirt without thinking too much about the pockmarks, rashes, scarification lines, and sores that he was always acutely aware of whenever he touched himself. Ugliness was part of his nature, an essential trait for his job. However it made him feel. What use would a beautiful nightmare god be? No, repulsiveness was a requirement for his position in the spirit company. And even though he desperately hated his job, the dreary, uninteresting, mundane, and occasionally traumatizing tasks he had to execute under the supervision of gods he hated in exchange for barely enough prayers and offerings to keep him in existence, every day he had to do what they could to survive in these hard times. Belief was scarce. Good offerings were few and far between, and almost every god he knew had already taken a prayer cut, unless, of course, they were friends with the CEO or in upper management. When the bucket was empty, he went back into his hut, naked and dripping, enjoying the feel of the evening air on his wet skin. Inside, he ignored the rotten smell of the slimy mess on the floor and started to ready himself for work. He could clean up later. No one ever visited him anyway. He dressed quickly, another pair of cut-off Ankara print trousers to fit his short and stocky legs, these ones orange and green, with hints of brown, a plain black cloak that sat on his shoulders and ran down to the back of his ankles, with cowrie shells and lizard skulls sewn into the fabric, and his face covered with black ash to complete his fearful appearance. By the time he stepped out of the hut again, the sky was a deep and abiding black, shimmering with stars and a brightly beaming moon, like bedazzling. He sighed heavily. Bloody waste of power. It only took him a few minutes to walk to the end of the Spirit Company residential area and connect to the bush path that snaked through the spirit shadow of the now-defunct evil forest. He stepped off the moonlit road and into the darkness of the path. The wet, woody smell of the towering trees and fallen leaves and peaty soil wrapped itself around him as the underbrush crunched beneath his bare feet and loose twigs slapped against his ankles. The evil forest, diminished as it was, still greeted him in the ancient way. With a whisper of wind and the murmuring of wild creatures, its power significantly muted since most of the spirits it once housed had been displaced, its sacred deities long gone. He thought he saw a pair of cherubic abiku, their small, child-shaped bodies silhouetted against the moon-polished stream that flowed at the far end of the forest. They were playing a game he did not recognize. They disappeared when he blinked, and he doubted his own perception, wondering just how drunk he still was. "Shayona, bastard!" he said out loud, and continued walking along the shortcut, remembering that Oshoshi, the hunter Orisha and one of the few gods he considered a friend, had told him over a calabash of palm wine that the Orisha Spirit Company board had voted to cut down the evil forest to make way for a shrine to cinema. It was a shame, but they had to pander to what few customers were left, Oshoshi had said. Shigidi understood. At least he thought he did. It was another depressing change. That was the way the spirit business was going. Evil forests are out. Nollywood is in. Faith is a funny thing. Shigidi kept walking and didn't exit until the verdant curtain of forest finally gave way to a clearing at the end of the path. He stepped into the moonlight, only a few hundred meters away from the entrance of his office. Like many other minor Orishas, he worked out of a satellite office. This one was a two-story red brick building older than he was, with six square windows facing out and a black sloping roof. Impossibly, he thought it looked even worse than he remembered it from just 2 days earlier, when he had collected his last month's prey pay, most of which he had spent on everything he had just thrown up. A new hole had appeared in the front wall just beside the door, and another wooden window pane had slipped from its place to hang precariously over the overgrown grass that surrounded the entire compound. The lights were out. Shigidi couldn't tell if it was because no one was there or if the power supply had been cut again. He sighed and his shoulders fell as he made his way to the door, sauntering through the curtain of hanging beads and into the reception area, standing in a thin sliver of moonlight that entered through another broken window. Shigidi. The shrill, high-pitched voice of Oya, the Orisha of Winds and his recently appointed supervisor, assaulted his ears with unexpected suddenness, and when it hit his still hungover brain, he winced. "You are late," she added, a bit less loudly. He turned towards her voice and saw her broad outline sitting in the darkness, planted in a weather-worn leather chair at the reception desk, like a tuber of yam in freshly turned soil. "You, this woman, why are you hiding in the shadows like a rat?" he asked, irritated. She scoffed. "Everything will be darkness and shadows until one of you idiots gets a sacrifice or act of faith big enough for us to afford to pay Shongo the cross charge for power generation. You know how much effort it takes to passively control the flow of electrons?" "No, I don't," Shigidi said truthfully as he scratched his head. He hated Oya's caustic way of distilling situations down to simplistic statements and projecting them back at him, like he was the only reason the company couldn't afford to power the satellite offices for minor deities. He wanted to tell her that perhaps if headquarters took a slightly smaller percentage of the overall spirit company prayer revenue to keep themselves so powerful, perhaps the situation wouldn't be so dire. But he knew better than to say that, so tried to appeal to her sentimentality instead. "But, well, I think it might help if you could speak to your husband about making an exception." "No." She stood up and stepped into the sliver of moonlight with him. "I won't." She was so close that he could smell her palm oil and a rich, earthy perfume. She smelled like someone had tried to fry a bouquet of muddy roses. She handed him a half-melted white wax candle and a box of matches as she took him in from head to toe, a look of scorn plastered on her face. "You are already an embarrassment. Ugly, stupid, always late, always drunk. You barely bring in any worthwhile prayers, and now you want to turn me into a beggar on your behalf? Hey, don't you have any shame? You want me to go and beg in my own house?" She hissed at him like a snake. "If you ever mention my husband's name again, I will slap you, you hear?" Shigidi balled his fists in anger. She was almost three times his height and significantly wider, with rolls of flesh around her arms, hips, and belly. Not just because she was that big, but because he was that small. Ugly and small. The characteristics that made him perfectly suited for his job, which he hated so much. Olorun had created him that way intentionally. Large head, ugly face, small body, ashy, and pockmarked skin of unpolished clay. Every time he saw himself reflected, in a mirror or even in a puddle of water, he craved the oblivion of alcohol. He had never even felt the touch of a woman, human or god or spirit. "How could I," he thought, "looking the way I do?" He hated it, and because of it, he'd spent a significant amount of his existence hating himself. He had taken up the issue of his appearance with his spirit resources representative, but had been told that his creation and appearance were both non-negotiable, Apparently, there were many non-negotiable aspects of his existence and of his contract with the Spirit Company, including what Shongo would do to him if he ever got into a fight with one of his wives. So, he said, "Fine. You're lucky I don't want to give you any trouble today." Hoping to end the issue there, the throbbing in his head was getting worse, and there was an intense pressure along his jaw. She hissed again and rolled her eyes. "Let me hear a word, please. You don't have anything to give, not even trouble." She thrust her chin toward the stairs, indicating his office upstairs. "What you do have is an assignment to get to. Someone sent in a client request and made a sacrifice 3 hours ago. Small, as usual, but you people need it. I am amazed anyone still believes in you. Log in to the human world and respond to them as soon as you can. You know you still have a lot of objectives to meet this quarter." She handed him a plain piece of white paper that crackled with green sparks when he touched it, as the spirit particles arranged themselves into a format he recognized. A standard work slip. He scanned it casually, taking note of a few key words and phrases. Business partner. Cheating. Hotel. Fear. Death. It looked like a standard nightmare and kill job. Turning round to leave, Oya asked him if he had seen Oshoshi, whose ground floor office was also dark and empty. "No, not since yesterday," he said. Oshoshi had seemed a bit less talkative and a bit more eager to drink than usual when they had met last night to celebrate the end of the month. At some point, Oshoshi had asked Shigidi what he thought of killing other gods and independent spirit entities that encroached into and operated in the Spirit Company territory without permission, competing for scarce business. Shigidi had laughed it off and made a joke about all being fair in love and spirit business. Oshoshi hadn't laughed. It was possible that Oshoshi was still in bed, as drunk as they had been. But thinking back to that exchange and the way Oya had asked the question, out of the blue, something made Shigidi's skin suddenly turn cold with worry for his friend. "Why are you looking for him?" Oya spun back around with more agility than Shigidi expected, then bent down and poked a thick finger in his face. "Why are you asking me why I'm looking for him? Is it your business? I'm able. Useless, lazy drunkard. Work you don't want to do, but when it's time to ask stupid questions, that is when your eyes will shine." Fists clenched again, he muttered, "Hag," under his breath, and walked away, climbing the uneven stairs with difficulty. Shongo's second wife was rude and aggressive, but he knew he could not insult her to her face. Her husband, his boss, Shongo, would punish him in ways that would boggle even the most macabre of minds in the Spirit Company. And his was already significantly macabre, being the god of nightmares. And even if Shongo didn't retaliate, he knew Oya could easily best him with her dominion over winds and storms. "Maybe she's right. Maybe I am useless. In a fist fight, what good is the ability to manipulate dreams and conjure up nightmares?" He shook his head and struggled to his office, huffing and breathing heavily. "I guess it's great if your enemy spontaneously falls asleep." His office was the small grey room farthest from the stairs at the front of the building, with a small bowl of water set in the middle of the bare floor. Several ancient charms hung on the walls. The basics of his trade, tortoise shell, cowries, palm fronds, dried frog skin, kola nuts, and 1 200-year-old gourd of palm wine that he had often considered drinking on days when the job didn't seem worth it anymore. Like in the days after he'd been trapped and tortured by a girl wielding powerful Bori magic, whose lover he'd killed as part of an assignment. That experience still haunted him, and he'd been drinking a lot more since it happened. But he needed the special palm wine to generate pure nightmare essence, and he was only resupplied once every 10 years. Shigiri made his way to the bowl, knelt, and placed the piece of paper Oya had given him atop it, whereupon the work slip dissolved, decrypting the message back into its essential spirit particles. The water in the bowl turned bright green. When it did, he placed his hand into it, up to his wrist. The scarification marks that formed the shape of a triangle on the back of his hand tingled. Each mark on his body served a function, and the one on his hand was a sigil, a login key of summoning for the wind between worlds when he had the right permissions. He broke into an incantation, repeating words lifelessly from memory. The wonky system that untangled corporeal fundamental particles and the spirit particles of Orun took a few moments to identify him and approve his temporary pass to exit spirit space. When it came suddenly. The wind between worlds wiped his office out of his consciousness like it had been painted out by an artist in one broad brushstroke. He was plunged into a familiar, absolute darkness, hurtling in some impossible-to-define direction. "Here I go again. Same shit, different day. New nightmare." House 22, Ibarra Housing Estate, Government Residential Area, Abeokuta, Nigeria. October 31st, 2016. 10:58 p.m. Shigiri re-entered the world of men suddenly, gasping for sensation like he'd just surfaced from a tar-black ocean of nothingness. He immediately wished he was back in spirit space, in Orun. The air was hot and humid and smoky, like he was breathing exhaust fumes from a poorly maintained okada. It almost made him choke. He rose to his feet carefully and looked around the worksite. The wind between worlds had deposited him in front of a brown metal door in a spacious but largely empty room. Cold, hard linoleum flooring. No carpets, no pictures. Just one dresser with a mirror set into it. It looked old, like it had been hand-carved locally using fine, dense wood from one of the nearby forests that lined most of the highways in the southwest of the country. There was a low, similarly high-quality wood-framed bed nestled in the corner of the room, and a fan spun lazily, suspended in the center of the ceiling. Shigiri wondered briefly why the bed wasn't centered in the room, too, instead of tucked away in the furthest corner, and why there was a solitary sliding glass window, which was open but had black metal bars running across it, slicing the evening moon like a series of parallel lives. "This looks like the home of someone deeply paranoid, and rightfully so." There was someone sleeping in the bed, a man, splayed out like he had collapsed backward onto the thick spring mattress and fallen asleep immediately. He had one thick-fingered hand pressed to his chest and a bright yellow and red Ankara sleeping cloth pooled around his feet like he'd initially used it to cover himself and had slowly kicked it off as the heat mounted. Shigiri took a moment to acclimatize himself to the stuffy warmth and the constant metal groaning of what sounded like a diesel generator just outside the window, before he approached the bed. The sleeping man was thick-set and tall. His feet spilled over the footboard, and his thinning salt and pepper hair was cropped short to match his stubble. His dark skin was clammy with sweat. There was what looked like a woman's hairnet hanging on one side of the dresser, but the man was alone. Shigiri was thankful for that. There was no risk of someone interrupting his work, or worse, being traumatized enough by it to hunt him down and torture him as an act of vengeance, like the Bori girl did. The man appeared to be in his late 50s or early 60s, with a protruding potbelly that distended both the white singlet and the elastic of his boxer briefs. According to the work slip Shigiri had received from Oya, this was Shigiri's target for the evening. "Time to get this over with." He climbed onto the bed in slow, careful movements, glad that the frame was low and that there were no side rails. He took one final look at the face of the man whose business partner wanted him dead. The vague personal reasons behind the things humans did or didn't do to each other didn't really matter to Shigidi. What mattered was that the business partner in question still believed in him enough to make a prayer and offer a sacrifice to the spirit company through an accredited Orisha Spirit Company customer service agent, a Babalawo. That being done, Shigidi would do as his believer asked, be on his way and get paid. The quicker the better. Partly because he could sense that the believer who had made the sacrifice was still awake somewhere, unable to sleep until the job was completed, as was the ancient custom, even though it didn't matter to Shigidi either way. But mostly he wanted to get it over with quickly because he didn't enjoy the work. Some ignorant human considered him an evil entity, a caricature villain who enjoyed manipulating fear and killing people in their sleep. Once, during a job, he'd even been called a demon by a woman as she tried to break out of the nightmare he'd woven in her mind. Can you imagine? Me? A demon? If only they knew how far from the truth that was. Shigidi put his hand out in front of him and spread his fingers so that his palm was pointed at the sleeping man's head. He closed his eyes and used his imagination, the core of all his power, to picture the swirl of loose thoughts and memories and emotions in the man's head as a mass of drifting, disparate, multicolored threads rendered visible to Shigidi by sleep. He projected his essence into the man's mind, feeling, touching, assessing each of them, searching. Red, a broad, beautiful woman in a towering gele, dancing at an owambe, smiling at the man. No. Orange, six scrawny children in dirty uniforms, laughing in a circle, pointing at the man. No. Yellow, two dark figures sitting at a table, one laughing and holding out a piece of paper, the other crying and holding out a golden pen, both waiting for the man to sign it. Not quite. Shigidi worked his fingers in his projected mind, threading them through the mass of images and sensations and sounds, trying to find the ones that held the most potential for primal fear. There was no resistance, which he encountered sometimes when his target's ori, their personal spirit, was particularly strong, or if they were possessed by or held strong allegiance to another spirit entity. He pressed on. Green. A sea of featureless faces, all sweaty underneath the hot sun, chanting, Jide, vote Jide. They are cheering for the man. No. Blue, a cloud of hot pounded yam floating in the sky as it begins to rain dark green ewedu soup onto the man. Definitely not. Black, a river of blood overflowing its banks, rising and rising and rising, and drowning the man. There! Shigidi snatched the thread of dread he'd found and pulled at it with the full force of his imagination. It unspooled rapidly, and he exhaled as he began to see the full extent of it. An incident in the man's childhood. A visit to see his grandparents in the village. A river where he played and bathed with his cousins when they went to fetch water to cook and bathe. A loose rock. A fall, blood, and then drowning, almost. A hand, firm like a tree branch, choking and vomiting and spitting. Fear, so much fear and pain concentrated into just a few moments, embedded early in the man's mind when it was still young and unstructured, lacking the clarity of logic. This should work. Shigidi held onto that thread of perfect fear made of memories and began to twist and weave it around his fingers, interconnecting the most intense parts of it together in short loops so that it took on a new shape, like a net. When he was done, he cast that net back into the man's mind, enveloping all the other free drifting thoughts. The bed began to shake as the sleeping man tossed and turned, his hand moving from his chest to his head as if he could push away the nightmare. Shigiri opened his eyes and watched the man twitch and shake for a moment, his breathing now quickened and short. Shigiri waited, allowing all the sensations of dream drowning to build until at their peak, they sent a memory of pain lancing through the man's lungs, suffusing his subconscious with recycled threads of panic. As it did, the sleeping man started to claw desperately at his throat. "It's time." Shigiri took a deep breath and jumped onto the man's chest. A high, tinny sound escaped the man's lips, and his long legs kicked against the footboard as he struggled to breathe against the real pressure on his chest and the imagined column of water throbbing in his throat. That was the part of his job Shigiri hated the most, waiting for them to die. Some struggled for a long time, resisting the pain and heat and oppression that his bulk spread from the pit of their stomachs to their chests. Some of them reached out, thrusting their minds in every direction, searching for an escape, for comfort, for salvation, for anything but the death hurtling towards them. Some, in the moments between dream and death, managed to wake and catch a glimpse of him sitting on their chest. A few even managed to say a few words before they were gone. The man was one of them. His eyes shot open like a bomb had gone off in his head. Curious, they were the same dark brown shade as the woman who, all those years ago, had called Shigiri a demon. The man's hands continued to claw at his throat, but they were less urgent, already drained of oxygen and energy. His eyes narrowed when he saw Shigiri, and a cluster of white-hot thought threads suddenly appeared in his mind, but they too were contained within the nightmare net that Shigiri cast. Among them, Shigiri detected a flash of memories that culminated in something like understanding.
Bukola,
the man croaked. His business partner's name, most likely. Doesn't matter. At least he will die with some sense of understanding, even if it is false. The threads were spontaneously cut, and the new threads of thought that entered the man's mind were frayed and short and lacking color. Not much longer now. Shigiri closed off his mind from the man's, giving him privacy in his final moments. He felt every vibration of the man's body, every desperate spurt of his rapidly slowing pulse. The man's face arranged itself into a mask of terror as the last breath squeaked out of him and he was unmoored from life. Shigiri exhaled deeply. Finally, job done. Time to go home and get a drink.
Your work is not very elegant, is it?
A voice like an echo from a faraway place said, coming from behind him. Shigiri started and lost his balance, falling off the dead man's chest. He bounced off the bed and onto the floor where he spun around to see who had spoken to him. It was Eshu Elegba, divine messenger, trickster Orisha of chance and fate, and head of communications at the Spirit Company. He was bare-chested and wearing red and black trousers with a straw hat. At first, Shigiri wondered why he looked unstable and then realized that Eshu Elegba was floating, thin arms spread out to his sides and legs folded underneath him. He held an electronic tablet in one hand and a crackling spirit work slip in the other. Shigiri immediately bowed his head in respect.
"Egbon," Shigiri said, acknowledging the senior Orisha. "No, the work is not elegant, but it's my purpose."
Eshu Elegba cocked his head.
"What brings you to my work site?" Shigiri asked.
Eshu Elegba held out the work slip.
"It seems you are popular today, Shigiri. Eh? 2 job requests in one night. It's been a while."
"I thought I was done for tonight, but it seems wahala no de finish." Shigiri stepped forward and took the work slip with another bow. He regarded it curiously and noticed that the spirit particles that bonded it were red and black, not his usual green,
Odd.
I have already decrypted it for you, Eshu Elegba explained.
Shigidi nodded, holding the work slip up so he could read it. It was another nightmare and kill job. Across state lines, over in Lagos.
Thank you. But you didn't have to. I was about to go back to the office. Oya could have passed it on.
Yes, but this aspect of me was already on the way to an Ifa shrine nearby, and it seemed urgent.
A smile cut across Eshu Elegba's face. The Orisha of chants and communications always made Shigidi uncomfortable, partly because he was a board member with far more authority and power in the spirit company than Shigidi could imagine, but mostly because of his contradictory, capricious nature. Sometimes he was jocular, silly even, making light of everything and playing little practical jokes. Other times he was deathly serious, focused on critically important information. That in itself wasn't unusual. Most gods had multiple aspects. But the time shifts between Eshu Elegba's personality shifts were measured in milliseconds, not days.
Shigidi looked into the coal-black eyes of the wiry god and tried to read what this was, a trick or a true assignment. But he could not project into the waking mind of another spirit entity, much less a management-level Orisha. He couldn't tell anything. All he picked up was the smell of sulfur and ash. A thin layer of sweat appeared on Shigidi's upper lip.
"Very kind of you," he said finally, deciding it was unlikely Eshu Elegba would have faked a sacrifice and prayer request in the spirit company system. It had to be real.
"I will need to go to Lagos as soon as I get re-entry permission."
No need for all that permissions and approvals nonsense," Eshu Elegba said, and quickly wrote something in his tablet. "Come, I will take you. I am always connected to the wind between worlds. It's the only way I can be in multiple places at once."
Shigidi hesitated a moment, then put out his hand, turning down his palm so that the triangular scarification marks on the back of his hand were visible to Eshu Elegba, a point of contact. Eshu Elegba's eyes rolled back in his head, leaving them stark white, and he reached out suddenly, like he'd been shocked, tightly enfolding Shigidi's hand in his own. Shigidi gasped at the sudden contact. His entire body felt cold, his clay skin tightening as the familiar sensation of spirit particle transfer began to spread.
"Good luck," Eshu Elegba said. And then suddenly, it came.
Eshu Elegba, the brown door, the barred windows, the dead man on the bed, the dissected moon, all disappeared as Shigidi was thrust into darkness, carried on the wind between worlds. A constant, faint rattling accompanied him. It sounded like an opele being thrown. He did not close his eyes, but the darkness invited itself. The journey only lasted a moment before he came to an abrupt halt, the world inserting itself back into his vision with a blur.